Our reading today is from the book of Judges, chapter 2, verses 7 through 15. The people worshipped the Lord all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great work that the Lord had done for Israel. Joshua, the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died at the age of 110 years, and so they buried him within the bounds of his inheritance in Timnath-Heres in the hill country of Ephraim, north of Mount Gaash. Moreover, that whole generation was gathered to their ancestors, and another generation grew up after them, a generation who did not know the Lord or the work that he had done in Israel. And then the Israelites did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, and they worshipped the Baals, and they abandoned the Lord, the God of their ancestors, who had brought them up out of the land of Egypt. They followed other gods from among the gods of the peoples who were all around them, and they bowed down to those gods, and they provoked the Lord to anger. They abandoned the Lord and worshipped Baal and the Astartes, so the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel. And he gave them over to plunderers who plundered them, and he sold them into the power of their enemies all around, so that they could no longer withstand their enemies. And whenever they marched out, the hand of the Lord was against them to bring misfortune, as the Lord had warned them and sworn to them, and they were in great distress. The Lord always blesses the reading of the Holy Scriptures. We are today in the book of Judges, and the book of Judges is, in my estimation, the low point of the entire Bible. It is composed of a series of stories. It's about 35 pages long, depending on the size of print in your Bible, and these are stories that take place 1,000 years before the time of Jesus. They take place at a time when Israel had no king, but rather it was a collection of tribes that were located in the region of what we know of as Israel today. And each tribe had clans within it, and there were leaders of families within the clans, but there was no king. And one of the verses that we hear frequently in the book of Judges is this: in those days there was no king in Israel. All the people did what was right in their own eyes, which of course turns out to be not very right. The book of Judges is life at its worst, a nation at its worst, a people at its worst. Now there will be other times that we will see this happen all the way through the Old and the New Testament, but this being at the bottom is just relentless all the way through the book of Judges. As you heard in the scripture that I read, oftentimes because of things being so bad for people, they were continually victims of area tribes and nations that would invade them, and sometimes no more than a band of ruffians who would come in. And so it was necessary, because the people had no king, it was necessary once in a while for them to get organized and have at least a militia that could fight off these neighboring tribes. And it varied between being a militia and a posse that would be rounded up to try to handle the problems that they had. So whoever was the military leader or whoever was the head of the posse, if that person was successful in driving back the enemy, then the reward was that person got to be what they called a judge. And for the rest of that person's life, the person could sit outside a village under a tree and judge disputes of people. It was believed that if you had military prowess, that you therefore had the ability to govern and rule people. So whoever was the military victor then got to become a judge. And as we read through then the book of Judges, which is why it's named that, as we read through the book of Judges, we see that there are about 12 individuals who achieved that status. They managed to win a fight, and then they, for the rest of their lives, they got to be a judge. So there are some people that were made judges whose names are familiar to us, such as Samson and Gideon. We'll talk about those in a moment. But there are other judges that are listed in this book. Some of them we probably can't tell the story right off the top of our tongues or right now, such as Ehud, Othniel, Tolleson, Jair, Jephthah, Ibzan, Elon, Absan. Not your favorite people probably, so, but they're all listed anyway in the book of Judges. One of the things that's very clear to us as we read the book of Judges is that there's a cycle going on and it just repeats itself. It starts out with God blessing the people and doing something for them. And then the people forget that God had blessed them and they end up going after other gods. And then before long, they end up doing foolish things and they destroy themselves because they're so caught up in their own desires and their own anxieties. And after they have destroyed themselves internally, it's very easy for an external enemy, a tribe or a neighboring nation, to come in and pick them off. And then they go into deep misery, and then God has pity on them and raises up a leader who delivers them, and life gets to be where it's okay again, and then people forget all over, and the cycle just goes over and over and over in the book of Judges. It's kind of depressing as we read through the book. I want to share with you this morning three stories from the book of Judges, people that we have, just to give you an example of the kinds of things that are going on and the insights that the book of Judges gives us. The first person I want to talk about is Gideon. Gideon was a farmer from a small village, and when he was young, his family and the entire village worshipped the Baals. So, not the Susan and Larry Baals, but the god, you know, the false god that was in the area at that time. It sounded bad when I said that, didn't it? So anyway, they were worshiping the Baal god, and the Lord came and told Gideon that he needed to destroy these statues of Baal and he needed to destroy the altars and so forth. And he was a little afraid to do it in the daytime, so he did it at night, and when people woke up the next morning, they saw that their idols had been smashed and they saw that the altars had been torn down. And the poles that they worshipped had been knocked over, and so they finally discovered that it was Gideon who did it, and they were going to put him to death, but his family intervened and saved him. They weren't going to let one of their own die for this. Now, at the time, the people were having problems from the nearby tribe of the Midianites, and so the Lord told Gideon that Gideon needed to raise up a group of people and fight off the Midianites. Gideon wasn't sure whether it was God who was talking to him or not. And so he decided to put a little test out there. And he said, well, if it is you, then I'm going to set this fleece out. He and God worked this out. They're going to set a fleece out. And if in the morning the area all around was filled with dew and the fleece was dry, then that would be proof to Gideon that it was God talking to him. I mean, sometimes we're not sure whether it's God or not talking to us, are we? So, sure enough, the fleece was dry and the ground was wet. So Gideon still wasn't convinced. He says, let's do this one more time. Tonight, let's have the ground be dry and the fleece be wet. And so it was the next morning, and so Gideon knew that this was God telling him that he needed to raise up an army to fight the Midianites. So he put out the call. He put out the call for the battle, and 32,000 people answered the call, 32,000 soldiers, warriors. So God talked to Gideon and said, that's too many. You need to trim it down some. So Gideon said, in essence, okay, all of those of you who are chicken, you can go home. and 22,000 went home. So he only had 32,000 to start with. 22 decided they were chicken and they went home. So now they're down to 10,000. And the Lord says to Gideon, that's still too many. So they decided to have a drinking test. I'll let you read about it, okay? But they're going to have a drinking test here to see who's going to be chosen and who's not. Well, only 300 passed the drinking test. And so that was the army that Gideon went out with. The Lord particularly wanted people to know that it was him, the Lord, who was giving them the victory. And it was not of their own might. And sure enough, they won the battle, and they drove off the Midianites, at least for a time. When Gideon was successful, then the people all said to Gideon, we want you to be our king. We're so happy with your leadership. And Gideon said, no, this is not how God wants things to work. God alone is to be king, and none of us. Humans are not to have that position. So he resisted the temptation to be given more power. Now, nobody's perfect, and neither was Gideon. And so Gideon comes back to the people, and he says, but I'll tell you what, I don't need to be king, but you remember those Midianites that we defeated, and you remember that every one of them had these earrings and made of gold? I'll take the earrings. And so he made a lot of money doing the Lord's work, Gideon did. Now, second character that we look at when we're reading through the book of Judges is the character of Jephthah. Jephthah was basically a robber, and he had moved out of the villages, and he was living out in the countryside. And he had gathered around him a group of fellow criminals and bad type people and so forth. And they continually would raid the villages. They would attack travelers along the highways. And so he was just basically head of a band of outlaws. And he was causing problems to the people. The thing is, he wasn't the biggest problem that the people were having. The biggest problem the people were having was not from Jephthah and his outlaws, but it was from the Ammonites. And so the people of Israel are trying to figure out what they're going to do, and they eventually came up with, they're going to kill two birds with one stone. They would make Jephthah their leader, this outlaw. He would be their leader, and then he could get rid of the Ammonites. So that's what happened. And they made Jephthah their leader, and he was relatively successful in driving back the Ammonites and ends up being a judge of Israel for 6 years. But to show you what kind of a character that Jephthah was really not interested in the will of God. He wasn't interested in the laws of Moses and that sort of thing. Jephthah was somebody who liked to make deals. He liked to bargain and work things out and make deals with people. So he's in the middle of this one particular battle, and he decides he's going to make a deal with God. And if God will give him victory in this particular battle, here's what the verse says. Jephthah says, if you give me victory in this battle, whoever comes out of the doors of my house to meet me when I return victorious shall be offered up by me as a burnt offering. So the deal Jephthah made was that if God would help him win the battle, he would kill on an altar whoever came out of his house first that night. Here's the thing. Jephthah didn't have any sons, and he had only one daughter who was probably 11 or 12 years old. And he knew who was going to come out of the house to greet him that night when he got home. He knew exactly who was going to greet him. So he makes a deal with God that he will slaughter his own daughter, 11 or 12 years old, if God gives him victory in the battle. Well, there's victory in the battle, and when Jephthah gets home, he His daughter runs out to greet him. And he ends up slaughtering her on an altar, murdering her as part of that deal. Now, Jephthah paid no attention to the five books of Moses that we've already talked about, where God absolutely abhors any human sacrifice. But that was no deal, no concern of Jephthah's. What happens to a nation when it turns to leaders that are so immoral? Now, a third person we want to mention in the book of Judges, because he takes up quite a bit of space, is Samson. And he's probably the best known of all the characters to us in the book of Judges. Samson was known for fighting against the Philistines. And unlike Gideon, who raised an army to fight against the enemy, Samson just tended to do it on his own. He just sort of wander out there and slaughter everybody because he was a man of enormous strength. And we all know the story. His strength was in his hair. And as long as he let his hair grow, as long as nobody cut his hair, he could pretty well take on most anybody. I mean, remember, this is before guns and bombs and so forth, where the physical strength of a contestant was extremely important. So the thing about Samson is that he was rude to his parents. He was deceptive. He was a sexist pig. He had the ability to be simultaneously clever and idiotic at the same time. Samson is an example of somebody who grabbed a hold of power, but he had no wisdom and he had no love. And all he knew was how to be a bully. And that was his life. He was a bully to his parents. He was a bully to everybody. And that was his way of solving problems. We sometimes refer to that today as the myth of redemptive violence. You know, you watch one of those movies where there's a bad guy and he's killing everybody, and before long you sort of find you just can't wait for him to get killed. And in the end he's killed and you're like really happy. And the only reason you're maybe not happy is that they maybe didn't torture him more before they killed him. And there's that tendency that human beings have to believe in this myth of that somehow violence itself is the solution to violence. And Samson is the epitome of that. And in the end, he simply destroys himself and he leaves his people worse off for it. He doesn't know how to deal with a problem without destroying everybody. The book of Judges there's not a single character in the book of Judges that we want to be like or we want our children to be like. We need to be really careful if we're going to teach the kids in Sunday school about these characters. It's the low point. It's the scum of what it means to be human all through this book of Judges. So let's take a look at the bad news, the good news, and the practical application. Is there any practical application? Is there any good news in this book? Actually, there is. So bad news first. The book of Judges is an example of rampant individualism. We see it several times. The people each did what they wanted to do, what they decided to do, what was right in their own eyes. And everybody decided, it's up to me. In those days, they decided, it's up to me to decide what's right and what's wrong. It was rampant individualism. In Judges, what we see is that people disregarded the commandments of Moses, the Ten Commandments, the laws, the rules, even rules of human sacrifice. And they decided whatever is expedient, whatever satisfies my anxieties, whatever satisfies the desires of my heart, those are the things that I will do. They didn't see God as someone who had given them blessings and offered them a path to prosperity. They decided to make up their own gods fashioned on anxieties and desires they had. It's bad news when people put themselves before the community. And it's not only bad news in the ancient world, but it's bad news in our own day as well. When people put themselves and what they want and their individualism above the well-being of others and above the well-being of future generations. Individualism is a source of enormous problems when it comes to the environment or when it comes to the economy. We can disagree on those subjects, but when we begin to make choices based on our own greed or our own bigotry or our own cowardice or laziness or our own craving for violence, at those particular points, individualism turns a society quite vulgar. And that's the bad news that we see all the way through the book of Judges. The good news is this, however. The good news is that when we are treated badly by others, when we're going through a hard time, whether it's somebody else who's treating us unjustly, or whether we're battling pain or battling a disease or something, the good news is this, that regardless of what we have done wrong, God still has mercy on us. It's this verse from Judges 2:18. Whenever the Lord raised up judges for them, the Lord was with the judge, and he would deliver the people from the hand of their enemies all the days of the judges. For the Lord would be moved to pity by their groaning because of those who persecuted and oppressed them. Now, while it's true that there's not a single character in the book of Judges that we would want to imitate, there's also not a single character in the book of Judges that God does not love. That really is good news for all of us. That there is nothing, Paul expresses it in such a poetic way to the Romans, there is nothing that can separate us from the love of Christ. Nothing. And there's nothing that separated the people of Judges from the love of God. Even though some of the situations were clearly of their own doing, even though some of the situations were clearly because they acquiesced to the wrong that was being done all around them, God still loved them and God still had pity on them. It's very easy for us to divide people into those that are good and those that are bad. It's very easy to divide nations into those that are good or those that are bad, or divide religions into those that are good and those that are bad. And we do that all the time. We have a very dualistic understanding of people and of life and of groups. But this doesn't hold when we read the Bible. And it doesn't even hold in the book of Judges, where things are pretty bad. Not all the good people are on one side and all the bad people on the other. In any situation. The fact is, we all have some of each in us. And it's because of that that it's good news that God continues to love us. God continues to love our people, regardless of the situations of what we do wrong. It doesn't stop the love of God. And that love persists all the time. That's the good news of Judges. God's love does not stop. If it didn't stop there, it won't ever stop. The practical applications of Judges, just very quickly here. First of all, don't be a Samson. It's possible to be, all of us have our ways we can be bullies. All of us have our ways we can try to strong arm a situation. But that's not the way, that's not God's way. We do need to work. We need to resist. We need to find ways to bring about changes that are right. But don't be a Samson. Don't do it with just power and lacking love and lacking wisdom. So, second practical thing from Judges, don't follow a Jephthah. There are times that we feel that we're in tough situations. We can feel that way at work. We can feel that way in a family situation. We can feel that way in a church. We can feel that way as a nation. But it's important, as we read in the book of Judges, to resist the temptation to follow a Jephthah, somebody who would lead, who has an idea of what to do, but it's totally immoral. It's destructive of other people. It's disregards the humanity and humaneness and the rules of God. So in tough times, don't follow a Jephthah. And then third, don't kill off the people in our own church or nation that we don't like. The book of Judges ends with a little bit of a civil war. That probably shouldn't surprise you that it ends with a civil war. But the people in the tribe of Benjamin, they did something bad, and the rest of the tribes decided to fight them. And so the book of Judges ends with all the other 11 tribes fighting the tribe of Benjamin. And what they do is they don't kill off all the men in Benjamin, in the tribe of Benjamin, but they kill off all the women. So all the women of Benjamin are killed off in this civil war. So then they have to decide what to do, because there still are some men who are holed up out in the wilderness. And they could go after those men and they could kill them off too, but then the tribe of Benjamin would be wiped out and it would be eliminated. So they have to figure out what to do. What's more important? That they get rid of these troublemakers and that they follow through on the revenge and the anger that they feel, or that they say, hey, we can't kill off our enemies. We have to keep the whole community together somehow. And so they decide, they come up with a plan and they decide they're not going to kill off the rest of the tribe. In churches, we have a tool that we use in churches to determine how bad the conflict, if a church is in conflict, we have a tool we use to determine how bad the conflict is on a scale of 1 to 5. And if you're a 5, you're out of there. You're already destroying yourselves. But level 4 in the scale of conflict is when one group of people in the church are trying to drive out another group of people in the church. They want to be rid of people. They don't want them around anymore. We see it sometimes happening in congregations where we're at that level 4 conflict. We see it happening in denominations. We see it happening also in politics. I mean, we're at a point in our nation where we're like at a 4.5 in many ways right now, where people on one side of the political debate really would like to see everybody on the other side just leave, and vice versa. And the book of Judges raises that issue at the very end of the importance of not killing off everybody who disagrees with us. That's not the way to step into the future. Even though we think people have done us harm, and even though we have trouble finding anything that we agree about with the other side, in the wisdom of God, we still need each other. And that's a decision they finally come up with at the end of the book of Judges. And I think it's good practical advice at a time when we see a lot of this going on around us, where people are wanting to get rid of whoever is on the other side. So the book of Judges, it is a low point, but it's not a low point that is unfamiliar to us in our own lives. And it's a book that, even though it's at the lowest point, it's a book that still shows us the love and the grace and the mercy of God. And for this, we find ourselves hopeful even at the end of this particular reading and ready to move on. Okay, you've had a week of Joshua, you've had a week of Judges. Next week you get to hear about Ruth. So we're going to move into a little better territory in the Old Testament at that time.